Kira, you are in Kenya on the other side of the world, although by the sound of this interview, you'd be very surprised to know that. Teams works very well. But anyway, so tell us why you are in Nairobi, Kenya.
I found out about this opportunity through IFAJ, so the International Federation of Agricultural Journalists. And each year they hold a congress in a different country. This year happens to be Kenya. It picks 10 people under the age of 35 from 10 different countries across the world. And they basically pay your way to go to this congress, and you get to do a boot camp, which is just a bunch of professional development, and you get to do some ag tours as well. And not thinking much of it, I was like, you know what, you don't know until you try. So I applied. I actually forgot about it. And then several months later, I get this email saying, hey, congratulations, you were selected. So yeah, I booked my plane tickets, and here I am.
Very exciting. Very few people get the opportunity to go to Africa, especially at your age. Tell us your first impressions. I know you came in on the plane. I guess it would have been Sunday. You've been there for a couple of days. First impressions.
There are no traffic lights. I have not seen a single traffic light. It's just a freeway, and you take your chances, drive, hope for the best. I don't know how there aren't more accidents. That was number one. Number two, the amount of people walking. It is just the amount of people in general, the sheer amount of people. It's five million people in Nairobi. And we happened to be driving at 5:30 when the workday was over, and just droves of people walking everywhere. You can barely see, like when you're looking in the ditches, it's just people walking. It's insane. And it kind of brings to light how sparsely populated Saskatchewan is, and even just Saskatoon. And yeah, that was just interesting to see. Also, the police are very intimidating. They just carry like AK-47s around. That was interesting to see. It was quite scary, actually, because that's something we would never see.
When I was in Mexico, I saw the same thing. They would have some of the police, not all the police, but they would be riding around in trucks, and they'd have the little hoods over their heads, too, with the rifles. And it is a little scary.
I asked the cab driver, we were making our way back to the hotel, I said, you know, what kind of guns are those? Like, isn't that a little overkill? And he said, yeah, but it works. It's intimidating, and we don't really have any violent crime. So I guess it works.
What about the food? What are your impressions of the food, the type of food that you eat? Are you eating a lot of Kenyan-type cuisine, or is there a lot of Western cuisine there?
I'd say it's a mix of both, and it's even a mix of East Indian food as well. There's some influence. There's some East Indian influence. So I'm just looking at a picture of my meal from the other day. There's couscous, and there's naan bread, cucumber salad, tomatoes, a lot of vegetables. It's pretty healthy. Potatoes, carrots, peas, beans, lots of mushrooms, chicken. You know what we had today? We went to a place called Brackenhurst, which sounds kind of German, but we had lunch there. And we ate fish that were caught in the Nile, which is not really anywhere near here. But I found that really cool because you hear about the Nile, you learn about it in school, and now I can say I ate fish from the Nile.
I also understand you had a nice little view of some of the wildlife in Kenya from your lunch position.
Yeah, yesterday we were eating lunch and up on a balcony. And it was a nice day because sometimes it's cloudy and you can't really see. It's a little foggy, but we could see for miles. And we looked down and two zebras ran right past where our hotel was because it backs up against Nairobi National Park. And that was a very cool experience because they're wild, right? And any zebras I've seen are like the Saskatoon Zoo has them in captivity, but this was a whole nother experience.
And you're going to get an opportunity later in the week to see a little bit more of that.
I am, yeah, on Sunday, my last day. I didn't even have this book. This was very last minute. I figured my flight leaves at midnight, which is unfortunate, but I have a full day to blow. What should I do? And I said, well, I'm in Kenya. Who knows if I come back? I might as well book a safari. So I did, and we get to go to Nairobi National Park, then the elephant orphanage, and then finally the giraffe sanctuary. So I'm really excited for that.
Very exciting. Getting back to the boot camp and the summit there, there's 9 other young leaders from different countries. Tell us a little bit what it's been like interacting with them.
So there's 10 of us. I can list the places for you. There's one from the United States, the UK, Germany, Australia, Argentina, Brazil, Kenya, Liberia, and Kazakhstan. Honestly, I expected it to be harder to communicate, given the language barriers and just the fact that we're all from different corners of the world, and we can't have that much in common, right? But that's not true. We have, honestly, everything in common, and we got along immediately. These are lifelong friends, and it was funny because I got into the hotel, and my roommate is from Australia, and we were talking about our lives and comparing stories, and we have almost the exact same life. It's very creepy, almost to a degree. I feel like she's my twin from another continent.
Are you learning more about agriculture in their countries?
Yeah. One of the guy from UK, he does a podcast. So he was interviewing each of us on what agriculture is like in our country and also the challenges that agriculture faces in our country. And so I've got to listen in on some of those interviews. And it's very interesting because I did my interview alongside the girl from Australia. And I was telling her about, you know, the tariffs on canola that we're dealing with, and canola meal and seed. And I said, but also trying to, you know, stop buying from Saskatchewan, but now they're buying it all from Australia. And she could kind of play off of that. And it was interesting to see how our agricultural industry is kind of connected in that way, and how they're all connected across the world.
The Young Leaders part of the event is over. Now you move into the International Journalist Conference. Any idea how many people are going to be from around the world there?
I think there's about 160 people from around the world and different countries. And they keep telling us, you know, take full advantage of that. Go meet everyone. Add to your contact list. These are going to be people that you'll need to know later in the future. And they'll help you with your career and just personal development as well.
Well, yeah. And if you end up going to Australia, you have a place to hang your hat.
Yeah, exactly. Anywhere. Honestly, all of these people are so nice and welcoming. They say, hey, if you come to our country ever, well, you have a place to stay. So that's nice too.
Now, there's going to be tours in connection with the conference. You know, of course, there's the seminars and all that stuff, but you'll actually have a chance to go see some things on bus tours. What tours have you signed up for?
I signed up for the first one is tour number two. It's goes to the snail farm. I read that and I immediately signed up because snails, duh. I love snails. And I want to see, because we have nothing like that, obviously, in Canada, or in Saskatchewan. I don't know about Canada, but I don't think we do. And so I wanted to choose something that was out of the box, not just your typical chicken or, you know, dairy barn. It was something unique to the area. And so I selected that one. And then number two that I selected was the tea processing plant. So they pick their own tea. It's called Gatira Greens. It's purple tea. You know, you've heard of black tea, white tea, even like red tea, green tea, but this is the first purple tea plant in Africa. There's a experience where you get to pick your own tea, process it, and then bring it home as a souvenir. So I think that'll be really cool.
You'll have snails for the main course and then tea for the beverage.
Yeah, exactly. I would never eat a snail, though.
And why is that?
I don't know, because I used to have pet snails. I had African dwarf, what are they called? Some African snails. And they're just my pets. I don't want to eat my pets. Same with frogs. That's why I won't eat frogs either.
Do they have locusts or grasshoppers for people to eat?
I'm sure they do. I know one of the tours was an insect-based tour, and I'm pretty sure that's exactly what it was. I didn't choose that one either, because ew.
As part of the boot camp, you went on some tours as well. Tell us about those.
Okay, so yeah, after the morning session, which we did the biography writing exercise and also some presentations, we took off to it's called CJAR, so Consultative Group on International Agricultural Research, and they have an institute called the International Livestock Research Institute, or ILRI. So it's one of 13 centers across 80 countries, so it's a huge outfit. And their purpose of the facility is to optimize opportunities for farmers so they're able to feed their own country, because right now, despite, you know, 22 million cows and 5.8 million hectares of land, the country can't sustain itself. So, like, for example, milk production rates are really low. A cow maybe produces 2 liters of milk a day. What really surprised me, though, is there's this state-of-the-art high-tech research center in the middle of what we would probably call the slums, or not a very wealthy area. There's people living in ditches and houses with tarps for walls, that sort of thing. So Yeah, that kind of surprised me. In roughly 2 hours, though, the tour, we had the chance to speak with specialists and scientists in the fields of, there's all sorts of fields, like methane emissions, gene editing, CRISPR technology, vaccine development, rice farming, indigenous species gene preservation, low methane forages, and then the reliance on livestock of local farmers as well. Which brings me to my next point. One of the highlights of that entire tour was there's a senior researcher, her name was Julie Ojango, and she was talking about the reliance on livestock of the Kenyans. And she said, last time there was a drought, a lot of cattle died off. They lost 230,000 Kenyans. That's how many people died because of their livestock not being able to survive, which that was amazing to me. That's insane.
Yeah, and there's just so many people over there, and agriculture in rural areas, I guess that, there's probably, I would say, probably a much larger percentage of farmers in Kenya as part of the population than compared to Canada. Canada, it's like less than 2%, and it sounds like Kenya, much bigger part of the workforce is involved in agriculture.
They just rely on it so much more. And they also made a point of saying, you know, you can tell a country is doing well by its exports because that means you have extra and you can give. That's not the case here. Like, they really can't sustain their own people. These people really are trying so hard to feed themselves and their families. And when you see the state that they live in, you just really want to do so much for them. And then funding got pulled recently. The U.S. aid funding got pulled. So, yeah, they're just really struggling, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So you're doing some social media stuff for both the farm writers and Canadian farm writers. And so if people want to see what you're doing, you are doing some social media stuff.
I am, yeah. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and I think by the end I'll have some YouTube as well. But yeah, Canadian Farm Writers Federation, Facebook, Instagram sites. I'm doing two daily updates, two or three. I'm trying for two. It's kind of hard to keep up because I don't have Wi-Fi, so I can't post while I'm out. I have to wait till nighttime, which isn't really nighttime where you are. It's probably 1 p.m. right now.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But anyway, that is great. I look forward to hearing more from you after the next 5 days. You've done so much in 2 days already. I can't imagine what it's going to be like when we talk to you again on Sunday.
These 2 days, like, they've been great and it's been amazing, but they feel like a week. Like, it's already felt like so long because they've been jam-packed. We start our day bright and early and we don't get done till midnight. It's a long day, but it's well worth it.